Wow, it's June 1st, and I'm sitting with Joey Burns of Calexico at the Cold Mountain Music Festival at Lake Logan in the beautiful Appalachian Mountains. Your first time playing in Appalachia proper, I believe.
Yes, it is. It's really nice to be here. It's nice to get out of the desert, I gotta say. This is gorgeous here. It's a great location.
You'll see the bald eagle sooner or later.
Mm.
He's making his home in these trees behind
wow.
us.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. Can you talk about some of the musical ingredients, the styles mm-hmm. that you point to in your music? And are you fans of anything else that is not really front and center or readily apparent in
right.
Calexico's music?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of styles and influences, and that's just sort of been part of our, I guess, part of our upbringing, you know, like having families that have a lot of different records in the collection, just being a fan of different kinds of music, regardless of where they're from, you know, so being a fan of world music, and you might get a hint of that in some of our songs, but, you know, I love... Amadou and Mariam, they're from Mali. I love Manu Chao, who's from France, but his parents are from Spain. But he's done a lot of really interesting collaborations in Africa and around the world. There was a woman named Laza de Sela, who was from Montreal, Canada, who sang in French, Spanish, and English. Some of the members of our band are fluent in Spanish, and so some of our songs are in Spanish, but I like stuff that's kind of off the beaten path, and so I love electronic music, I love hip-hop, I love rock, of course I love folk music too. I mean, I'm really open to anything. I've been really, since my daughters are 8 years old, I've been really getting into Katy Perry. You know, hearing and seeing my daughters sing, You're Gonna Hear Me Roar, is just incredible, you know, and so how can you not love that? And so I think we're all pretty open to a lot of different styles of music. I've just been really bitten by that Latin bug. I love minor blues, and Latin music has a lot of that.
I'm a big fan of music from Colombia, cumbias,
yeah,
disco fuentes, all of that stuff. I just eat it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting rhythms, you know, it's just stuff that's different, you know. I mean, I love, you know, classic music, whether it's rock or folk, or even classical music, but and jazz too, but I after a while, you just are yearning for something new and different. So that is what's propelled me ever since I was a kid. You know, when I was in college, I studied classical upright bass. And when I was in college, I saw a friend was selling a sitar. And because of the 60s and Ravi Shankar's work with the Beatles, I bought it. And I used it to write some compositions for one of my music theory classes. And it was a little difficult because it's tuned in, you know, not easy keys. I think that the piece was in F sharp minor. And I had written out some string parts for some of my friends to sit in with me. And they were wondering, like, why did you choose F sharp minor? It's a really difficult key. But it was because of the instrument. And I think those are the kind of things that make you look at music and these expressions in a different way. And I think it's not only fun, but it's a good challenge.
And a sitar doesn't sound like it's going to be easy to play anyway.
It's really not that hard. I mean, for me, what I did was very limited. But it's what's interesting about it is that you bend the notes. So it has that sort of, that connection to things like the blues, where you're bending notes, or in like blues rock or rock, where you're bending notes. I mean, that to me is something very interesting, which kind of reflects what the voice does, right? So it kind of opened me up.
I like your pin on your jacket.
What is that? Oh, yeah, I got a couple. I got the skull right here with the hat, and then I've got the Navajo Nation pin. I bought that when we went into northwestern Arizona to go to Zion.
Excellent.
Got some friends who are Navajo, so I thought, hey, this will make me think of them.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you've got the record coming up, another one with Sam Bean, a full record with Sam Bean.
Right.
Beam, and it makes me wonder if there are any collaborations or you know, accomplishments, anything that you might not have checked off that you would like to fulfill in your career. Do you even think in those terms?
Yes, I do. The list is endless, and it's always changing and growing. you know, we're on the same record label as Tom Waits, and the first thing that you do when you sign on to Anti Records in Los Angeles is you're told, don't ask to have Tom Waits sit in on your record or to do any collaboration with him. And that was a really hard one for me to go, okay. But I still have it in the back of my head that maybe someday I'll get a call to play some guitar or even some upright bass for a Tom Waits session, or just to help, you know, bring him coffee or something, just to be around his talented self. I love his spirit. I really do. Yeah. He's one of many people that I really admire, but that's just one off the top of my head. But even with friends that we have worked with before, there's always sort of that feeling of, oh, we should get back together and do something again. You know, specifically with my friend Gabby Moreno, who's from Guatemala, went to school for music and voice in Los Angeles and decided to stay there. And she has built up this amazing career working with people like Van Dyke Parks, who they've collaborated together and made this beautiful record. And now she's been doing a lot of work with Chris Thiele on the Live From Here radio show. And she's just a super talented vocalist who can sing in Spanish and English. Recently there was a tribute to Linda Ronstadt, and she just was amazing. I saw a video clip of her singing, and I was just, you know, she has that power and that also that ability to be really delicate and fragile with her voice. So yeah, you know, I like stuff that's kind of different and has a sense of character and tells a good story.
Wonder about what is the primary motivator behind Calexico. Is it live performance? Is it that just making the music? What is it?
Yeah, I mean, even just today, just sound checking, it felt so good to play music again. It's been a really long time for us in regards to our schedule. We've had a really long break. The last tour was in Australia. And yeah, I mean, the live shows and performing live really is, I think, at the core of a lot of artists, especially ours, in our band. And so that's really important to have that outlet. I can play piano at home, but it just winds up sounding like another sad piano in the corner. So, you know, getting together with other musicians, whether on stage or even in the studio, sparks ideas and energy. And that, and in itself, is therapeutic. It's so important to be, you know, be doing music in this life, and especially in these days.
Did you know 20-some-odd years ago that you'd be here now doing this?
I had no idea. And I mean, I had the energy and I had the enthusiasm and dedication, but it could have easily just gone towards organic farming or, you know, working in the healing arts like, you know, acupuncture or massage or something. I could have been a teacher, I could have been a doctor. I mean, you know, who knows where that would have gone. I was told early on, like, you know, look at your grandfather. He's a doctor, but he also plays accordion and plays music. Maybe you could do that. And wouldn't it be, you know, fate has delivered this this path where one of the things that's connected both John Convertino, our drummer, and myself is the fact that we both have family members that played accordion. His father played accordion and piano, and so we kind of have that shared appreciation for the instrument. And so inevitably there is accordion on Calexico Records. Sometimes it's more front in the mix, sometimes it's in the back, but accordions are great. I really love that instrument.
Yeah, I love how the history of these instruments becoming woven into American music, you know, accordion being from, you know, what, Germany,
yeah.
Europe, and then it becomes integral into a lot of Latin music.
Mm-hmm.
Fiddles and banjos become, yeah. You know, modern-day bluegrass and things
mm-hmm.
like that here
yeah.
in the Appalachians.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, they're all traditions. We're all connected. I mean, you go far enough back, we've all shared, you know, some kind of corner of the earth together. And I'm really fascinated. With history and especially family history and how the music and the instruments have become part of that fabric. And I love Henry Louis Gates Jr., his show, Finding Your Roots. That's one of my favorite shows. And I've done my own sort of, you know, modest look back into ancestry and also my wife's. And I think it's really interesting, you know. And then when you kind of break it down to everyone has a story, then you can relate to one another regardless of where you're coming from, what language or music that you sing and speak.
Talking about the other paths that you could have taken mm-hmm. instead of music, have you or any of the band done things outside of music to support yourself along the way?
Yeah, you know, I do tend to just kind of help others with music. The last solid job I had was washing dishes at a cafe in Tucson. That was, you know, 24 years ago or something. But now I am the main person in my household who does the dishes, so I've honed in on that talent really well. John works on vintage cars. He loves Volkswagens. So he's got an old 58 Karmann Ghia that he's restored and keeps up. He's really good at that, and also, you know, doing stuff at the house. So in a way that sort of supports him and his house. let's see, what else? I think Jacob sometimes teaches. He helps out with some of the mariachis. You know, there's a great mariachi music scene in Tucson, and a lot of the players are teachers. So Jacob gets called in to help with trumpet, and he's really quite talented. And Brian Lopez, who's sitting in with us these days, he is a substitute teacher as well. So when he's not playing music with all of the different projects that he's got going on, he works at a school.
Talking about dishwashing reminds me of a zine. Were you a fan of zine culture back when those were really around?
A little bit.
Did you ever read Disher?
I didn't read Disher. That sounds like it's right up my alley.
No, I'll have to send you a copy.
Yeah.
It was the guy who would only do dishes, and he made a zine about it.
That's so cool. I can totally relate.
He had a Hobart tattoo.
Oh, yeah. You know, when you're doing the dishes, you have so much time to really, like, think and dwell, or just, I don't know, either listen to the radio or something. When I worked at the cafe, you know, you could put on whatever CDs you wanted, and so there was a lot of... I remember distinctively listening to the soundtrack to Paris, Texas, which is a very ambient and slow, kind of sad soundtrack done by Ry Cooder. And I just loved it so much. And that kind of inspired me, you know, to, like, you know, to touch on some of those themes of sort of that southwestern ambience and see what I could do with my own version, you know. And I think that's kind of why we are drawn to music, is because we like something that we've heard, and we want to find out how to make that happen in your own, in your hands, or in your own house or garage, or, you know, the cafe down the street, or with some friends camping underneath incredible canopy of leaves and trees.
You've been on the road for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Decades now, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've actually counted the number of shows you've done. I don't know if anybody really does.
No, I haven't done that. I haven't counted. I just like doing it. And it's been a while, so it feels really good to be here and just doing this show. We're so happy and honored to be at this location and at this festival. It's a really good one.
Yeah, that's a great feeling about this
mm-hmm.
place.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of tours and being on the mm-hmm. road, are there any notable experiences that you can recall that stand out?
Well, just recently, we got asked to play in Greece last summer. And they said you could either do two shows, one up north in Thessaloniki, a club show, which we've done a lot. We go there quite a bit. And where you could play, you know, like a venue, maybe a small theater in Athens. Or you could do one big show in Athens. I'm like, well, that sounds cool. Where's it at? It's like, well, it's at the Acropolis. I'm like, you're kidding me. So it's an ancient Roman-built theater. The Greek one, I found out, is being excavated as we speak. And maybe in a few years, like 10 years, it'll be unearthed and people will be able to go see performances there. But it was amazing. And I think because of the location, it just blew me away, you know. We wound up doing two nights there. And, you know, I guess the Greeks love seeing this kind of desert noir music in their own corner of the Mediterranean. And it was so much fun. And walking through, you know, I wasn't nervous. Maybe it was because of the heat, you know. You're just so, like, oh, you just have to deal with this intense heat, which is, you know, like being back home in Tucson. But when the sun set, the lights went up, and we walked through this massive arch as tall as a tree to see this crowd of 7,000 people. And I mean, I was just like, this is incredible. You know, I am really stepping through a portal of time. And it was truly fascinating. And then as I slowly looked up to my right and above the, the amphitheater, I could see the Acropolis lit up at night. It looked like it was some sort of orb or moon kind of just hanging there. And it was such a great experience. And I'll never forget it. And that just happened, less than a year ago.
Oh, wow.
But those first shows, too, are really the most monumental. And then when you show up and people arrive and you have your first album printed on vinyl, and you get it back from the record company, and you're just super excited. There's nothing that beats that experience. And those are usually, the smallest shows. And it's such a thrill. And I highly encourage everyone to do it, because just having that experience is truly worth all of the work and the miles and the time invested.
Great. We have to give Fred Mills a dollar every time somebody says Desert Noir.
We do. Thank you, Fred. Yeah, Fred and I used to hang out at Zia Records on Speedway in Tucson, Arizona. And it was just nice chatting about music. And I think there should be more of that. And I guess I was reading some kind of news story on NPR recently where they were talking about that there's more record stores going in. Small boutique record shops. And I think having the chance to talk with someone about music is important, and just sharing ideas or stories or what was your first record, or what do you heard recently that's kind of like turned you into a big fan of, say, another genre of like cumbias from Colombia or from Mexico. I mean, there's so much great music, and sort of the historical component too is really fascinating. So when we've gone and traveled around the world, especially to the Middle East, it's really great to come back with records or CDs or whatever it is, or tapes of albums that you never would have heard of if you just stayed in your own town, in your own state.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, this is excellent. Did I leave anything out? Anything you want to add?
No, I feel like we covered some great ground. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Terrific.